You're listening to the Transform Your Nutrition Podcast with your hosts, Rebecca Heald and Jeff Ash. Our purpose is to help individuals and families transform their relationships with food and develop healthy bodies, minds, and attitudes, all without restriction, guilt, or shame.
So, hi, Jeff. Afternoon.
Yes.
Or morning. Yep. Do that every time.
It is. I know. It's we got to do our little thing. I guess we're creatures of habit.
Yeah,
we have the same little things that we do. We greet people the same way. We have our same little quirks and all that stuff.
We do. Yeah, our safety strategies, right?
Yeah. That's probably why our tens and tens of followers love us and come back and listen to us every week.
Definitely. Yes. Thank you. Anyway, yeah, we should say thank you to everybody that is listening and tuning in. And, you know, we are really, really grateful. And as usual, if you've got any comments or anything that you would like us to talk about at some point, then, you know, please do share it, because Jeff and I do love to hear your feedback and get some suggestions.
Yeah, but, definitely.
Yeah. But here we are again. Anyway, it's Friday. And yeah, had a great week. Have you, Jeff?
It's been pretty good. And yesterday I delivered another talk on child nutrition for another coach. He has basically calls it his Nutrition Academy, the BDL Nutrition Academy. And he has a nice group of people in there that he coaches on a group basis. And so I was able to deliver the talk on child nutrition to about a dozen, I guess, parents in there. And so that was really good. Had some great discussion at the end, and always like helping people to find ways to really help with their children's nutrition rather than taking many of the approaches which are common that are all actually end up to be quite harmful. And so,
good. Yeah, so important. I mean, I know we're not going into that in any detail today, but it's funny because I was just talking to some friends recently about that and about how to approach nutrition, about the things that we should be considering and the things that we shouldn't be doing and stuff. And she was like, oh, really? You know, one of my friends yesterday, she was like, really? You know, I do talk like that. I do talk about healthy, unhealthy. I do, you know, et cetera, my children. I was like, yeah, you know, that's because it's the way we were brought up. It's what we what we believe. But, you know, I think what's important is for us to just kind of, I suppose, to just inform people, isn't it, so that they can make choices based on that rather than what they have led to believe over the years.
Yeah, as with anything, it's good to just constantly keep learning and growing. And when we find out that there's something that we're doing, whether it's with our kids or with ourselves, that is not really the best way to be doing it, and to be open to change and changing our mindset on it, changing our way of thinking if there's a better way out there. And that's how we grow as human beings. I know there's so many things over the years I've changed my mind on, from mental health to nutrition to physical activity to political opinions, and yeah, you know, whatever it is.
I think that's it, isn't it? I think we should all strive to kind of have that growth mindset.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and be open and honest. You know, I mean, even just in this last few months, changed the way that I approach certain things with my coaching. And that's good, because we're always learning. When we think that we're not, that's when, you know, the worries or the trouble should start to kick in, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. And that's great, because, you know, we're going to be talking about some things today, too, that I think will hopefully open some people's minds to a different way of looking at some things. And it may just reinforce what they already know, understand, believe. But it's always good. That's what I love about these talks that we have, is that we're able to discuss different topics and forces us to research things, dig in a little deeper also, and articulate what it is that we have going on in our head also.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Definitely improves our practice, I think, as coaches as well.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
So yes, talking about today then, we were going to delve into how, I guess, our food choices and the way that we eat has changed over the last few decades, and the impact, I guess, that this is having on people. So I guess first, I mean, to start this off, how would you say that the way that we eat and what we eat has changed over the last kind of 30, 40 years, Jeff?
Well, there's definitely a lot of a lot of things that have changed over the last 30, 40, 50, 60, 100 years even. And I think that some of it comes down to the food environment. I think some of it comes down to media influence. That's something that people overlook, I think, where we try and say, well, it's you need to take personal responsibility for your actions, which we do. But at the same time, when you have all of these influences coming in from all kinds of directions, then it's very difficult to say that. For example, I'm always bringing up these things that are non-nutrition related, but I think sometimes it helps to wrap our head around it. You have a child who is, we see this with abuse. So children who go through abuse tend to be more likely to then be abusers themselves. And it's because of that influence. And it doesn't take responsibility off of the abuser to say, well, they were abused as a child, so you can't expect them. But at the same time, you can kind of understand that they're doing what they were taught. Those influences push people in different directions. And the same can happen with things like nutrition and the media influence and the media where it's pushing us to choose certain foods, to pushing us to go to McDonald's, pushing us to go to these other types of foods. And yes, it's personal responsibility, but when we're constantly bombarded and it's easier to make, quote, the wrong decision than the right decision, then it's understandable why so many people struggle in this area.
Yeah, definitely. And I do want to go on to that a little bit, actually, because I think that's important to discuss when it comes to diet culture as well. And I've got a little anecdote on that one that happened to me this week. But I guess one thing that I wanted to kind of also discuss or, you know, make a point on is that, you know, our food environment has changed, hasn't it? Like you said, and, you know, there is a lot more highly processed food available. Okay. Right. And yeah, the media influence is important on that. But I think one of the points I wanted to make is that, you know, this highly processed food, the processed foods that are more readily available to us, they don't have the same impact on our appetite regulation system, do they?
No, not at all.
And I think what we've got to remember is that, you know, we, you know, our grandparents, you know, our family before our grandparents, the foods that they would have eaten would have been more natural, they would have been more nutritious, mm-hmm. and so they would have supported them in terms of regulating that appetite system, which basically helps you to control your weight, etc.
Right.
But obviously we're not, you know, that's not the case now, is it? You know, to kind of put it into, I'm trying to explain it now in a way that people would understand, but I think it's this thing where, you know, obviously more nutritious foods, nutrient dense foods, you know, our body recognizes them, doesn't it? And it kind of puts mechanisms into place to tell us, you know, when we've had enough and when we need to stop. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Whereas a lot of overly processed foods, they don't, you know, our bodies don't register them in the same way, because we're getting, you know, a lot more calories for a lot less nutrients, if that
right.
makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So this is where this kind of, I think this almost this drive to overeat is coming from right now, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And we've actually seen that, you know, those were some things that people kind of speculated. So there was some speculation that maybe these ultra processed types of foods are maybe contributing to the propensity for people to overeat when they're eating a lot of those. And the cool thing is that because we have scientists that are interested in this, they've actually studied this. And, you know, we've talked about the Kevin Hall, who is with the NIH. He does a lot of obesity research and he does a lot of studies in metabolic wards, which is basically where they take people and lock them away so that you can control for every single variable. And he and his team did a really nice study on this exact topic where they fed people what would be considered an ultra processed diet versus a whole food, minimally processed diet. And when you look at the pictures, it's really interesting because they actually included photos of all the meals, and the ultra processed is very similar to what a typical American or probably a British family might eat on a fairly regular basis, and not horrible, you know, not horrible as far as nutrient content and that kind of thing, but just kind of typically boxed foods and quick prepared things. what they found was that when people ate the ultra processed food diet versus the minimally processed, calories and everything were equated, fiber and protein were even accounted for, so they were matched up. They had a tendency to eat on average about 500 calories per day more. And what does 500 calories a day add up to when you start thinking in terms of body fat gain or fat loss? That's about a pound a week. So you can see how it can have this dramatic impact. And obviously that was all processed and all minimally processed, but it, when you start overlapping them, it can still have that gradual effect on just the weight gain over the years.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. And it's, you know, and I think it's important for us, you know, especially when people like seem to, you know, why is it that I keep wanting to eat, even though I've had, you know, maybe a large meal? It's okay. What did that meal constitute of? Because if it was, you know, quite processed, it doesn't, like, it, you know, like you said before, it doesn't have to have been like, you know, terribly, it doesn't have to have been like tinned Campbell's meatballs, you know.
Right,
it
could, exactly,
like, it could have been frozen chips and fish fingers or something like that.
Yep.
But still, you know, it does not, you know, basically that food doesn't tell us, our body's not recognizing we're full as quickly as if we'd had, or it's not filling us up as well as if we'd had something that was, you know, more unprocessed and cooked from scratch. Mm-hmm. And you know, and I think that that's really important for people to understand, I think. But on the other hand of that as well, I also kind of think what we also need to bear in mind, that that doesn't mean that we should not be eating any processed foods whatsoever. Yes. It doesn't mean that we need to start demonizing any foods. Mm-hmm. It just means, it's just, you know, it's something to take into consideration. And I think as with anything in nutrition, we've got to embrace the ambiguity, haven't we?
Yeah.
And I think, you know, yeah, but we'll talk a little bit more on that anyway. But I wanted to pick up actually on what you said about, obviously, they tended to eat 500 calories more a day. It's interesting as well, because I was reading some research, and it was saying that kind of since the 70s, and again, this is observational science. It's not quite, you know, it wasn't a clinical trial like Kevin Hall's, but it was talking about how since the 70s, I think it is, on average, each person does tend to eat 500 calories more a day. And that, what kind of happened in the 70s? It was the rise of diet culture. It was, you know, suddenly people were going on and off diets. So there's no, I think, you know, I think the two are interlinked. I think this idea of, you know, there being more processed foods around that is messing with our appetite regulation systems, which is making us want to eat more. And then you've got the how we're eating with all of the diet culture and the diet rules that is making us try to forbid that processed food, which then just has the opposite effect, doesn't it? Because we know that once we start to forbid foods, we want them more. So actually we're driven to overeat in the short term. And then what does this mean if we're driven to overeat in the short term? In the long term, we, this then leads to weight gain, and it can often lead to our set points being driven up, etc. So it's really, really, you know, it's really, really complicated and complex when you take it, you know, when you look at it. And also as well, what you said there about the media, you know, and the media having this influence. And, you know, everywhere we look, we've got adverts for certain foods. We walk down the high street, we've got lots of, you know, fast food places. And then on the other hand, you've got like diet culture making you feel guilty, making you feel bad for eating all of these foods. And, you know, and I think the point that you made there about the media and about this personal responsibility and all that is really important as well. It's because everywhere we look, yeah, we are being told subliminal messages, aren't we?
Yeah.
And I think one thing I wanted to point out was how this happened to me. It's kind of linked, but, you know, on, I think it was Wednesday night, I was watching a program. And in this program, there was a woman and she was really, really thin. And I sat there watching it. Now, I'm quite happy. I am quite happy, as you know, with my body. I'm quite happy with the way that I eat. But I was watching this program and it made me think, my God, I need to lose weight. You know, how she's so thin. Okay. Now, of course, I was able to recognize that. And I was like, don't be so silly. She's probably had to lose weight for the part. And you don't know what's going on in her personal life. You don't know what her genetics are like. You don't know what her relationship with food is like. So I was like, stop being, you know. But all I'm going to say is that even for somebody who is quite, you know, comfortable in her own skin and someone who I think has got quite, you know, a healthy relationship with food these days.
Yeah.
I still am having to, you know, everybody is still having to fight against those messages that are coming through. And if you haven't kind of developed that resilience, if you're not in touch with what's going on in your body and your mind, then it really, really can affect your behaviors. Yeah. I mean, if I didn't think the way that I think, if I didn't have the mindset that I've got, that could have actually led me to end up going on a diet, as right. I'm sure, you know, many people may have done. So I think, you know, I just wanted to emphasize your point of like how the media and the messages from, you know, that we're kind of, you know, subliminally receiving all the time mm-hmm. have an impact on us.
Yeah, they do. And it pushes us for perfection.
Yes.
And even in nutrition, we're pushed for perfection as opposed to good. Yeah. Even great, but it's like even someone who eats very well is still pushed to eat even better, and to eat even cleaner and those kinds of things. And oh, you have visible abs, but they're not. You don't have a six pack. You only have a four pack. So you want to, and then when you have a six pack, oh, well, you should shoot for an eight pack. You know, it's just there's this constant pressure that you're never good enough.
Oh, yeah.
In your skin. And you even see, hey, get ready for your beach body. Well, apparently what the media says is a beach body is perfection. Because you even see, I saw earlier this week a picture of, I think it was Eva Longoria at a beach, and she was playing beach volleyball in a bikini. And it was really interesting because they were commenting on how she was looking a little soft. And because she was going down for a dig on the ball, and it made her gut stick out just a little bit, like not even very much, but just a tiny bit. And so they made this comment. And then I looked, I was curious. So I went searching around and found another photo from that same day when she was standing up, just standing there, perfectly flat stomach. I mean, she's not like six pack ripped, but it's all a matter of this camera angle. And now they're starting to comment on how she's kind of looking soft, which in the first place was completely inappropriate. But at the same time, it's kind of like, you know, if you bend over and you have a roll showing, oh my gosh, that's yeah. horrible. You've got to do something about that. And
yeah, and this is it. And this is the other thing where, you know, and I think that, you know, I think it's really important that we do bring up that and, mm-hmm. you know, about how that those kind of messages really can mess with our body image, because at the end of the day, this is where then diet culture manages to sneak in, because mm-hmm. we're vulnerable to thinking that we don't look good enough. We're vulnerable. This is where diets start from, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I was even having this exact conversation with a client recently, and because we were taught, you know, often I have clients that will come to me and they're like, oh, you know, when I am a certain size, or when my clothes can fit me, or when I'm thin, I'm going to be happier. I'll be so much happier. And it's always like, you know, think about when you were actually that size that you're fantasizing about right now, okay? Because usually they've been that size at some point. Were you happy, you know? Or did you want to be thinner? Did you want to be more toned? Yeah. Or did you want, you know? Because the reality is that you will never be happy when you get there either, because there'll always be something else that you're yep. striving for. And there's one client, and, you know, you'll know Tanya, because you've seen me, you've seen some of her testimonial videos. And she said she has been dieting since she was 21. She said to me, when I was 21, I was 9.5 stone and I went to Slimming World. You know, so even at nine, you know, a weight that she was, you know, right now was completely, you know, it was, you know, obviously what diets over time have driven her weight up much
right.
higher than that. But when she was there, she felt that she needed to go on a diet and she needed to lose weight. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the thing. Our culture just pushes us that we're never good enough. And
yeah. And also as well, there's this, and I think this is one thing that I find really, really, you know, what I've noticed more and more in my coaching is that, you know, the thing is that nutrition is ambiguous, mm-hmm. okay? And we could talk more about that, can't we? But I think the thing, you know, what I find really, really interesting is that people have defense mechanisms, don't they? Mm-hmm. That are often subconscious, but that they don't want to necessarily learn a new way because it kind of almost threatens their rules and their beliefs that they've developed right. over years. Mm-hmm. So like when I was talking to this, my friend, about how she approaches nutrition with her child, you could tell she was quite defensive about it because it's like, well, that's mm-hmm. all I've ever done, you know? And, you know, and I think it's this, the biggest defense mechanism that I see, which is linked to what you talked about, perfectionism, is this black and white kind of thinking. This black and white, it's got to be this way or it's got to be that way. And this is where people are finding it really difficult, I think, when navigating the environment that we live in as well. Because, like, whilst we're saying that processed foods do definitely, you know, have a negative impact on our ability to regulate our our intake of food, that doesn't mean you shouldn't eat them.
Right.
It's a little bit like how there's some research, isn't there? There's been a lot of research over time to show that kind of, you know, it could be beneficial to reduce the amount of animal products. Okay.
Right.
Let's say that we consume in our diets, and we should, put more focus on, plant foods, nuts, legumes, etc. But that doesn't mean that animal foods should be bad.
Right.
Have you seen this? How people have suddenly gone, oh, I need to go vegetarian. You know, have you seen all this in the media about how, you know, eating meat is bad, blah, blah. No. You know, animal products give you some really, really important nutrients that you need within your diet, but you probably just need to be focusing more on other things that you need to include as well.
Right.
But people just like to think, like a rule to live by. They like it to either be this way or that way.
Yeah, and that's a big problem. And I think a lot of people, and hopefully people listening will find this more encouraging, but a processed food meal that is prepared with love, that's served to your family in a pleasant environment where everyone is enjoying the conversation around the dinner table, whether that's grabbing McDonald's and putting it out on the table and enjoying it, whether it's making a box of mac and cheese and fish fingers, or as we call them here, fish sticks, chicken nuggets, chicken tenders, whatever it is.
Yeah.
I prefer fish fingers. I think that's a cool name. I always like that.
We have crab sticks. Do you have crab sticks?
I'm sure we do. Yeah.
Well, we have crab sticks. So when you say fish sticks, I always think of crab sticks.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, come on. We love fish sticks in this house.
Yeah. But even that kind of a meal is still better than no meal, or better than throwing a bag of fast food into the back of the car. Or it's even better in many ways than throwing a bag of veggie sticks and hummus back to your kid in the back of the car while you're rushing off to the next activity. When you really stop and think about it, what is the most beneficial way to eat? And it's not to eat this perfectly clean, perfectly prepared meal, but rather sitting down, enjoying it, disconnecting from all the other things that are going on and focusing on your food and being respectful of the food that you're eating, tuning in and enjoying it. That's where I think a lot of people sometimes lose sight of the really important things in life, that a processed food meal that is prepared, again, with love and in a good environment is still a very good meal. And in fact, most of our processed food now, a lot of it is heavily enriched with vitamins and minerals and nutrients. So even though it's processed, it's still providing good nutrition for your children, for yourself, for your family. And so what we're talking about here, when you're thinking about processed, unprocessed, is understand what it does to your appetite, but don't say, well, since it does this to my appetite, I'm cutting it all out.
No.
Yeah.
And the thing is that, you know, having those foods regularly in your diet in certain quantities, you know, is not going to do long-term damage. It's not going to do any, you know. I think, you know, it's about the balance, isn't it? Mm-hmm. And it's about getting the focus right. And it's, you know, we eat fish fingers here. My kids love fish fingers. Mm-hmm. But when I do fish fingers, I'll do it with some potatoes or I do it with some veggies, so that, you know, it's a balance, okay? Mm-hmm. It's not about saying that processed food, like you said, needs to, and it's also as well, thinking about kind of like with the animal products thing as well, you know, and thinking, the other thing is that, you know, you'd think, okay, no processed food, no animal products, then burgers are bad. No, you know, a burger could actually be providing you with some really important nutrients. You might not be getting enough iron in your diet. Mm-hmm. And, you know, having a burger, loving a burger, you know, because it really satisfies your taste buds. It's giving you some really important nutrients that you might not get very often. Having a burger every now and then is great. It's not something to be avoided.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's really, really important, is that it's about exactly what you said. It's about having respect for your body. And it's having respect for your own emotional well-being, your own social functioning, and not thinking that you need to apply black and white rules. Mm-hmm. And the thing is that when you do dial into your body and you are listening to your body, it will tell you, it will regulate, it will tell you what feels good and what doesn't, you know? And I think nobody thrives well, let's be honest, Jeff, you know? I mean, you know, we all eat processed food in some way, shape mm-hmm. or form, but nobody does thrive well on eating super processed foods day in, day out. You know, nobody does thrive well on eating kind of, you know, filling up on pot noodles and chocolate bars and bags mm-hmm. of crisps all day, every day.
Right.
But on the other hand as well, nobody is going to thrive at their best if they're just completely eating clean food all the time.
Right.
You know, they're probably going to still be missing out on some important nutrients, and B, they're going to be missing out on enjoyment, satisfaction, pleasure, social functioning, all of that. So, you know, I think it's just about educating people and making people aware of the impact that certain foods have on their body.
Right.
But learning not to attach rules to that, and just learning to listen and to think about how those foods make them feel so that they can make choices that are in line with that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's really what the key to this whole thing is. And, you know, we kind of made some notes coming into this particular episode. And one of the notes that you made was respect, not rules, is the way to navigate today's food environment. Yeah. And I think that's an important way to navigate this environment that we're talking about, where we have a lot of these processed foods available, and just respecting food in that context, and using that to make then those decisions for ourselves based on what we understand the food to do, as far as how it makes us feel, how it impacts our appetite, what it does as far as our energy, and all of those kinds of things. Yesterday in the talk that I had, there was somebody who asked a question about their child who's begun eating a lot of highly processed foods when they're out. They're making these food choices and they're very thin. And she was talking about this child and how she seems to have a hollow leg. And so she was concerned because she was making all these different food choices for these very high energy dense foods. And she was concerned about that. And I said, if she's seeking out those things, she may need that energy. So I wouldn't be overly concerned with that. It sounds like she's actually very aware of what her body needs. And so she's respecting her body by seeking out high energy density foods to provide the energy that her body needs. Because over the course of this time where this has changed, she hasn't put on any appreciable level of body fat, according to this mom. And so She's respecting herself and feeding herself. And while some of that is processed, you know, it's because that's what her body needs.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess, you know, I think, and we talk about it all the time as well, you know, as our role, our job as parents, how old did you say that the girl was?
This was a young teenager, 13, 12 or 13, something like that.
Yeah, and I think as a parent, as long as you make sure, because I think sometimes we can overthink it and we can get overly concerned, but I think as a parent, it's about making sure that you're doing your job as a parent, and then let your children do their job. Mm-hmm. And I think as a parent, it's important that we do not restrict, you know, those highly processed, highly palatable foods at home, mm-hmm. you know, so that they are available, and yet there is still a structure, you know, and that as parents, we are providing children with a variety of food, mm-hmm. et cetera. But like you said, then if she's not feeling that, if she can trust, if she's got an environment at home where she trusts that she's going to get all of the food that she needs, and then she's making those choices, then like you said, she probably is just needs that. You know, she's listening to her body, which is important, I think. Mm-hmm. Definitely. Yeah. You know, it does remind me as well. I mean, I've got no answers to this, but it was just, you know, I was somebody reached out to me recently because her 10-year-old son was talking about how he was really unhappy in his own skin, and he only wanted to eat foods that were going to keep him thin. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's a 10-year-old boy. And I think, you know, this links to what we were saying before about, you know, social media and the messaging. You know, he must be picking this up from social media or his friends, mm-hmm. or things like that. But it's really worrying and concerning when 10-year-olds are worrying about you know, about their body image and their weight and the impact that certain foods have on that. You know, it's scary. It's scary.
Yeah, when kids are starting to seek out low calorie foods, when they're thinking in terms of what's the low calorie option here, oh, I should choose the Muller Lite, as you point out, versus the full fat yogurt. And when they're actually starting to think in that way, that's not a good, you know, a lot of us would think, oh, that's so nice. Look at little Johnny. He's thinking of the calorie content of these foods to make sure he doesn't eat too much. And that's actually a horrible thing for a child. That what that's saying is that they've now tuned out from their appetite regulation system, and they're starting to think of external ways of controlling their food intake instead of what does their body need. You know, that young teenage girl that I mentioned, you know, she's provided for. There was a nice structure in place, and she's being provided for, but she needs that. And so when she's out away from home and has complete control over the what and how much, she's choosing those options that provide that high amount of energy, which to me, I was like, that's fantastic. And I was encouraging the mom that, you know what, that's fantastic that she's not thinking, hey, how do I stay thin? But in fact, she's thinking, I'm hungry. Yeah. I need to get food that's going to satisfy my hunger. And that's a good thing. And when you're tuned into that, that's a great place to be.
Yeah. And I think, you know, and again, just on the back of that as well, and what you were saying about when children are making food choices because of how they're going to impact on their weight, it's worrying. And I think, it's coming up more and more, and I don't know whether it's because of what's been going on recently that is, you know, but I had someone who was telling me about her 14-year-old daughter who, again, you know, she was talking about how she was feeling fat and she didn't want to eat certain foods. So, you know, and again, this is, you know, because of social media, her friends, etc. Probably, I tell you what, I think this is just my kind of, you know, anecdotal, observation. Mm-hmm. But from what I've heard from parents, I think it's tending to be, you know, I'm finding that, you know, young teenagers are struggling a little bit with their body image. And I think it's because they are spending more time at home right now. They're doing online learning. Mm-hmm. So they're spending more time on social media. They're looking at, you know, images of people that have been cropped, that have been edited, that have got filters on. Yep. And they're probably spending more time absorbing all of that, which is, you know, damaging their own self-image and their own body image, which, you know, I think that was prevalent anyway. Mm-hmm. But I think the more that people are at home and not around people and at school and, you know, and getting good role models and stuff, I think, you know, I do think that is worrying. And but then having said that, you know, my seven-year-old, he's seven now, sorry, yesterday, yeah, he was in the shower and he was just saying, "Mummy, my teacher was telling me how certain foods are unhealthy. You know, all these foods are unhealthy." And I was like, "Oh, darling, what?" She goes, "Well, no, I know they're not unhealthy, Mummy. You know, I know that all foods are okay and we shouldn't think about them, you know, like that." And then I just thought to myself again, you know, teachers are, they're attaching, because this was where the conversation came from with my friend. And she was like, "But should I not be teaching Archie, my children, what are healthy and what's not unhealthy?" And I'm like, "No, you should be teaching them how foods make them feel, you know, and talk about how some foods make us feel better and give us more energy than others, absolutely. But don't talk about it as in unhealthy or healthy or good or bad, because it just, like you said, it's going to get them to suddenly see a moral value attached to food. So they're going to, at a very young age, they're going to be seeking out foods that, it doesn't matter how they feel, it's about the impact that they're going to have on their weight potentially, you know? So I think it's, we just need to be so, so, so careful.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it is the same when what we're talking about here in terms of, yes, you know, processed foods do have a different impact on us to kind of a whole foods. But if you're listening to your body and listening to how it reacts and listening to how it responds to foods, then it doesn't matter, because you'll find that you can, you know, you can have foods that are more processed and often, you know, more highly palatable because they found the sweet spot. The manufacturing companies have found the sweet spot, you know, and then that is okay. But the thing I think that, you know, not only do we tend to eat more processed foods because they don't keep us, you know, as full, and you know, they don't trigger the same kind of you know, satiety triggers that unprocessed foods do. There's this thing as well of, I think it's like I said before, of if we start restricting the foods, we then want them more, so we end up overeating them when we do get them.
Right.
Well, I think it's, you know, it's a complex interplay of things, isn't it?
Yeah, it definitely is. And you know, another note that we had pointed out was that it's important to look at adding.
That was exactly my next point.
Yeah, yeah, as opposed to what we need to cut out. So if we are eating a very highly processed food diet right now, let's say, let's just for the sake of argument, say our current diet is 100% processed foods. It's all boxed foods. It's all pre-prepared things. And it's a, like, it's exactly what that Kevin Hall study had for the processed food diet. So let's say that's the case. Well, what should we do to approach that? Should we start saying, okay, well, I'm going to pull out these things. I'm going to take out the mac and cheese, and I'm going to take out the cookies, and I'm going to take out this. Well, if you start doing that, all you're doing is now reducing the energy intake that you're giving yourself, and your body still needs that energy. So what's it going to do? You're going to add something else in there. And usually, if that's the way you're eating and you're approaching it from the perspective of what do I need to take away from it, then you're more likely to put back in the same things anyway, and possibly even more, start eating more because you've deprived yourself, and then now you go after it. So a better approach would be what can I add into that?
Yeah, and that's exactly the point that I was trying to make before as well, isn't it? You try and restrict it. So in the short term, you then overeat it. Mm-hmm. Which then in the long term drives your weight up, which then makes it, you know, it just becomes a vicious circle. And exactly that. And this is the thing. It's like, okay, we know all of this now. We know that that processed food has this different impact on us. Mm-hmm. So what do we need to start thinking? We need to start thinking about how we need to be adding things in. Mm-hmm. And we need to be monitoring as well, you know, how that makes us feel, how it makes us feel to add foods in, mm-hmm. and how it makes us, and also as well, it's about monitoring your habits right now. So if you, you know, have a look at what you're eating on a daily basis right now. If you know that you're eating, you know, more trans fats than you should be. So trans fats are, you know, man-made thing, you know, the man-made mm-hmm. fats that we should be kind of not eating too much of in our diets, aren't they? You know, baked goods, crisps, donuts, things like that. You know, are you eating too many of them, you know, in comparison, or a lot more of them in comparison to fruit and vegetables and things like that? If so, then you need to be, rather than cutting them out, just think about adding in, you know, fruit and vegetables, more fruit and vegetables and stuff, and then see how that feels.
Right.
Are you struggling? You know, are you struggling with energy levels? Then that, you know, you might find that making that switch will help. Are you struggling to go to the toilet? You know, then, you know, adding some more fiber you might find might help. So monitor. And it's so funny because I was only having this conversation this morning with a client, Jeff, and, you know, she has been making, it took her a while. She was the client who told me this morning that she would eat crisps instead of almonds because a well-known slimming club told her to go because almonds are too high in fat.
Right.
So she should eat crisps. I mean, come on. Well, you know, how does that work? But, I mean, I've been working with her for a bit, and finally it's clicked. It took some time. She says, I am allowing myself all the foods that I enjoy. You know, I'm having the nuts when I want them. I'm having X, Y, Z. And she said, I am not eating as much bread. Bread was her, I say a nemesis, I shouldn't say that because I wouldn't say that, but bread was the thing that she was restricting and then binging on.
Right.
And now because she's allowing herself everything that she enjoys when she wants it, she's found that she has more energy levels, food doesn't have so much power over her. She said, you know, her digestive system's working better. So she's noticing now how that's making her feel. So adding in more foods is making her feel better. So she's more likely to continue with doing so, I think is my point.
Yeah. Yeah. Those are just great points, because that's such an important distinction to make when we, so many things with nutrition it's going to come down to our perspective. And so when we approach it from the perspective of what do I need to cut out? What do I need to stop doing? As opposed to, hey, what can I add in here? What can I start doing? Yes. Whether that's adding in more physical activity, whether it's adding in more protein or fat even to your diet, because, you know, we were talking about last time the impact of including all of the different macronutrients in our snacks, as opposed to just having carbs or just protein or just a fat source and that kind of thing, but combining all of them. And so when we start thinking more about adding in, then that's typically a much better approach for managing these different areas of health.
Yeah, I've got a couple of things actually, a couple of anecdotes on that. And one was a couple of her where clients have actually found that, like the girl that I spoke to you about this morning, she said, you know, when I have bread, I have to have something with it. I have to have it with some avocado. She goes, I don't know why I can't just have it. And then I explained to her, I said, this is why, because when you combine food groups, when you add things to it, it helps to keep you fuller for longer. You're more satisfied. You've got more pleasure from it, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And there was another client as well who I was asking him to, I think he was having some Greek yogurt as a snack. And I was like, right, add to that, add some nuts, berries and stuff like that, and see. And then he was having this as a snack and then overeating later in the day. And I was like, look at how you can make it a more balanced snack. So he was doing, and when he came back to me the next week, I was like, it made a massive difference. It tided me over much, much longer. I've noticed the drive to overeat, sugary things in the evening has reduced. So, you know, I think adding things in is so powerful in that respect. But it's funny because I had one client who said to me, I said to him, you know, think about, we were talking about, he loves his cakes. He loves his muffins. Okay. And he was like, I need to stop eating them. I need to stop eating them. I'm like, no, you don't. You don't need to stop eating them. You just need to be looking at kind of what you can add in. And I was like, you know, when you're having that afternoon snack, that's a muffin, maybe, you know, can you have it with some Greek yogurt? Can you add some fruit? Can you do this? Can you do that? And he said to me, Rebecca, he said, if I start doing that, he said, all that's going to happen is I'm going to still eat the muffin and then I'm going to eat the yogurt and then I'm going to eat this and all that. So basically my calorie intake is going to double because I'm just not going to, you know, I'm just going to eat all of this extra food. And I was like, all right, okay, let's just see, you know, okay, fair enough. Just have a think about what I've said to you, you know, just let it. Anyway, he came back to me the next week and he went, wow, he said it worked. he said, I didn't do what, you know, I didn't like double my amount of calories. He said, if anything, I get less because, you know, I was adding more to the variety of what I was eating. And yeah, so, and he said to me as well, he went, something happened that's never happened before. He said, I bought 2 shoe buns and I didn't touch them. They were still there like 3 days later. I just didn't want them. And yeah. I was like, do you see what I mean? It's like, yeah. But we've got this underneath, you know, we've got this kind of this resistance, haven't we? Or what I was saying to you before, this kind of, this defense mechanism that's in place, and that's in place to try and protect you.
Right.
Because it doesn't want you to ruin the world, the view world that you've got right now. But when you kind of, I suppose through coaching and through listening to things, you kind of absorb it and then you kind of start, then it comes out, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. We see that, you know, exactly what you were talking about. When you manage your hunger and your appetite by feeding yourself well at each opportunity to eat. And when you have some kind of a structure in place so that you're not just grazing all day long, you go into each meal then not famished. You go in with maybe a certain level of hunger, but then you get to that meal and it's much easier to eat an appropriate amount of food for what your body needs when you're not going into it completely hungry, because the last time you ate, you just had a bag of crisps or chips or pretzels or whatever it was that knocked out your appetite 3 or 4 hours ago, but it didn't sustain you long enough. And so now you come in and you're much more likely to then, because you're so hungry, you think, oh, I'm going to serve myself more food. So you end up serving yourself more food. And then and if you've already are struggling with the fact that you don't like to leave food on your plate, now you're more prone to eat that larger serving that you've given yourself, or you just serve yourself more food, you eat it and you don't give yourself an opportunity for it to start taking effect and impacting your level of satisfaction and your hunger and all of those things. And so it makes it easier then to over consume calories at those different meals. But if you can regulate that throughout the day and control that by just sticking to that structure and being mindful of these different things that are important to add in, then it makes it much easier. We see this in research with mixed meals where you combine protein, fat, and carbs. And we see this with those with type 2 diabetes, that they get better glucose regulation when they're adding in, adding in the different macronutrients instead of saying cutting out carbs. It's like, no, you don't necessarily need to cut out carbs. If you add in these other ones, it helps your body regulate the glucose in your blood too. And so it's just important to really think from that mindset instead.
Yeah, I think that's a really important point. And it's about then listening to how that feels, isn't it? And I think, I think the point that I think we're trying to kind of get across here as well is that, you know, we want being aware and being informed, you know, having this knowledge is not for people to go away and kind of start restricting or taking food away or applying rules. It's to help you listen to your body. It's to help you tune back into your body better rather than listening to those rules. So it's, you know, it's kind of take this knowledge, take this information and experiment and see how it feels. And then, you know, and it will hopefully start to make sense. And I think it's important because then when you listen to your body and getting in tune with your body, but you're knowledgeable about the impact that foods have, it can often take away that kind of, you know, because sometimes we think that we eat in a way we do because we've got no willpower, we can't control ourselves, or, you know, when actually, you know, there are foods have an impact on us, you know, and that is beyond our control. And it's about kind of listening to then how we can, how we respond to that and stuff, and letting that kind of inform our behaviors, if you see what I'm saying.
With
that. And I think the thing as well is that, you know, what I've found with most of my clients is actually, you know, when you tune back into your body, you probably will find that you'll end up eating in a way that all of those diets in the past have probably, you know, not all of them, but, you know, certain diets in the past have told you to eat. Mm-hmm. But it's coming from a different place. It's coming from a place of, you know, of you listening to your body and you making choices. Because this has happened to me, you know, with recently with one client. And she said to me, I think her kids were getting a takeaway, getting a pizza. And she was, you know, she said to me in the past, she said she would have just got it. Wouldn't have even really listened to whether she wanted it or not. She would have got it. She would have overeaten it. She would have felt guilty. Or she would have not got it because her diet told her she wasn't allowed to have it. And then she would have craved it and felt bad and been really annoyed and, you know, given up on a diet over time. Mm-hmm. But this one time when her children got pizza, she said, I didn't get them. She says, I didn't get the pizza. She goes, I let them get the pizza, but I didn't get a pizza. Sorry, she said, because I actually really didn't want it. Mm-hmm. And she said, and I never had that annoyed feeling afterwards. I never had that kind of feeling of deprivation or feeling that I'd missed out because I made that choice because I wanted to make that choice. I didn't make that choice because my diet told me to.
Yeah. Yeah. So, that's so important.
Yeah. And this is what I mean. You know, we are encouraging our clients to eat, you know, in a way that supports them to thrive best, but they're doing it from a place of, you know, where they're empowered. They're doing it from a place where they're listening to their body. They're not doing it because we've given them a set of rules.
Yeah, exactly. Tell me this. You've probably seen this happen with people too. And this is something I see happen a lot, is that people come in and they, I think all of us really, we do this. You think that's, whenever I do this, this is the outcome. So when I eat snacks or when I eat this food, it makes me crave this. So that you've almost spoken to yourself and convinced yourself that this is who you are. This is how you are. That's just the way I am. Oh, I just lose my temper. Yeah, I'm just a hothead. You know, all kinds of different things that we tell ourselves in life. And we sort of, in some way, in many ways, make excuses, or we don't allow ourselves to grow, and we aren't allowing ourselves to say, hey, is there another way I can do this? Can I eat these particular foods without going off the rails later and binging? Well, yeah, you can, but you've convinced yourself you can't. And so now you've almost like spoken this truth into existence for yourself, and you're not allowing yourself to move on past it. Have you seen that with people? I see it all the time, and I hear it all the time. I've used it myself.
It's the thing, fixed mindset.
Yeah.
It's a fixed mindset. It's you're telling yourself, you're identifying mm-hmm. with behaviors that you've developed over time. You're identifying with learned behaviors. Yeah. And yeah, absolutely. I found the client that I was telling you about then that said to me, well, no, I know what I'm like. I won't be able to just add and not, you know, because I said this to him afterwards. I said, has this not proved to you that the way that you thought you were behaving, you thought that was just a part of who you are, but it's not. It's a behavior that's been learned, probably through restriction, probably from the diets you've done in the past. I had it with one client, another one who said to me, he said, I'm just the person that can just eat and eat and eat. I never know my hunger, I never know my fullness. And he's just, you know, he's identified with that. Mm-hmm. And it's so funny because in our session yesterday, he literally just mentioned something to do with childhood, and I picked up on it. You know, we just listening and just picking up on things. And he didn't know he was leading me, but he was leading the conversation towards this. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. Tell me a little bit about, he was talking about how he would eat everything in front of him, you know, mm-hmm. and didn't know when to stop. And I was like, oh, I'm wondering if you had to eat everything on your plate. And he said something about childhood. He said, I'm sure it's linked to my childhood. And I was like, oh, why did you have to eat everything on your plate as a child? Well, no, not at all. You know, we were allowed to eat whatever we wanted, whenever we wanted. We could go in the cupboards when we wanted. And I said, oh, right. I said, that's interesting. There was no structure in place. No. Right. And he said, no. And I said, so I imagine then you never really went hungry as a child, did you? And he was like, no. And I said, so, you know, can you see how this is playing out now?
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, and I always used to, you know, we'd always sit eating, watching television while we're eating, and this was another one of his issues. And I was like, mm-hmm. can you see how these are just things that you've learned? They're not part of who you are. So I don't know if that kind of, but yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I see it all the time. And clients come to me, one of my clients, Vic, when she came to me, she was like, oh, I could never, you know, we talk about other stuff and, I was trying to get her into doing some chilling out a bit, some self-care, some reading. She's like, oh, I can't read books. I've never been one to read books, blah, blah, blah. And I was talking about it today. And I said, I remember when you were sat in my room and we were having a session and you were saying, oh, my dad buys me books all the time. And I can't get into it. She's read about 6 books in the last month now,
yeah.
You know, because exactly that. We tell ourselves self-fulfilling prophecies often, don't we?
Exactly. That's a great way to put it. And that's just, it's something that we should be aware of that. We should be aware that, you know what, these self-fulfilling prophecies often set us up for these difficulties in making these changes. And if you'll just take a step back and say, okay, this is the mindset that I've had, but what if I do go ahead and try this? What if I try this a little, what if I try something different this time and see how it makes me feel? And when we tune in to how we're really feeling about things and those changes, then it allows us to really see what potential things are out there for us to be able to enjoy and experience. You know, when we find out that, yeah, when we say, okay, I can't control my appetite and my hunger, so I have to restrict myself. When we start to unpack that and realize, well, no, that's actually what's making this difficult for you is this constant mindset of restriction. And if you step back, take a look and really look at how you feel when you do things different, then it often is a very enlightening experience.
Yeah. And just, sorry, I've got another little anecdote on that, mm-hmm. which from even this morning with the coaching session with my client. And when she came to me, I've been working with her for a while and she's always struggled a bit with bread. And, you know, emotionally she restricts it. And, you know, she's like, I can't eat it all day. Cause you know, if I do, I'll just end up overeating it. And then all that happens, cause she was talking to me about a day, She tries to restrict it, and then things will get too much. And she was talking in our last session before today. She was talking about how she had a really bad day and she had what she called a beige day. So she had a bit of a, you know, all sorts was happening. She was stressed. And so she just had a day where she just literally binged on bread and stay. And I said to her, how about we start introducing, you know, this is because you are restricting it, you know. Mm-hmm. Emotionally, even if you think that you're not doing it physically, you know, because you are allowing yourself some bread, you know, emotionally, you're not allowing yourself as much as you want. You might be going for a little, you're allowing yourself like a tiny bit of bread at a time. And then you're going back and having loads more because you've mm-hmm. not allowed yourself to have as much as you want. So let's normalize it. Let's start adding in a couple of slices of bread breakfast. I can, you know, let's start adding a couple of slices of bread at lunch and see what happens. Mm-hmm. Oh no, I can't do that. I can't do that. I won't be able to control myself. I'll end up overeating it. Anyway, she came to the session. I was like, so how's it gone with bread? Anyway, she did say, I'll give it a go. I'll give it a go. Even if it's just for a day or two, Rebecca, I'll give it a go. Anyway, this was 2 weeks ago. We had our fortnightly session today. And I was like, how's it going? She went, oh, brilliant. She says, I'm okay. I can have two slices of bread. I can have a normal amount of bread. She goes, I don't know what you did and I don't know what you said, but it worked. She, you know, but she just thought she was this person that just couldn't control herself around bread.
Yeah.
Whereas when she allowed herself to practice and, you know, with some of the things that I suggested, she found, because, you know, she said, you know, I'm not saying it's, you know, there might not, the, you know, I'm not going to say it's going to be perfect forever. There might be a day when I says, yeah. And what happens if there is a day when you overeat it again? You know, does it matter? You've shown yourself the last 2 weeks you can do it. You know, this isn't perfection, this is just progress. And I thought that was, that's a really good way of kind of you know, showing that when we do open ourselves up to new ways. But the thing is that I think the point that you make there as well about this you know, this resistance that people have and this these self-fulfilling prophecies that people kind of you know, and it's black and white, it's a bit of black and white thinking. I can only do it this one way.
Yeah,
I think it's really, really normal. I think that, you know, like you said, most clients when they come to us, they have this because they're in between, you know, they're not, it's changes of process, isn't it? And you have to, you have that resistance in the beginning. And, you know, you are, I get clients that come to me still and they're still a bit, can she really help me? Is she really going to get me where I want to be? And then they have to prove it to themselves. Well, you know, we have to show them that they can do it.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's something that it's good to just be aware of that, that that's something that we as human beings just, we tend to do it. You and I do it. You know, we're not saying that this is something that, you know, clients who come to us do, but we don't. I mean, we do this ourselves all the time. Yeah, I mean, I can, and it's, what's amazing is you can, I find myself giving advice to people on things that I'm not taking for myself at times too, because I know the answer, but I haven't applied the answer to myself. And it takes time for me to make those changes and to grow in those areas. And one of those areas just recently has been in the area of having these fun foods, candy in particular, around in the house. I have, up until fairly recently, I had spoken about, and I've shared this, I think I've shared this on podcasts, that I am a person who, when I have those fun foods in the house, I tend to just eat them all at one time and I don't have control over it. And I kept telling myself that that's who I was. And I, whether it was conscious or unconscious, I was constantly saying that I can't have a bag of candy in the house unless I plan to eat the entire thing. And what I started realizing was that, you know what, let me see what I can do about that. So I consciously did this the other day. I had a bag full of chocolate. And, you know, there was probably 30 pieces in there. And normally I would have eaten them all in one sitting. I mean, just being honest here, that's how I deal with candy. I just eat it until it's gone. And what I did was I said, you know what, I'm going to allow myself to eat it. And I'm going to have two pieces at each one of the times that I eat. And I just told myself, I'm going to have two at breakfast. I'm two at my snack, lunch, snack, dinner, and so forth. So I just sort of told myself that. Well, what I found was I had a couple pieces and then they were sitting there for days. I didn't eat them even at each meal. When I gave myself permission to eat them there, I didn't. And I actually had this bag of chocolate, which I normally would have eaten in one sitting. It sat there for over a week. And I ended up actually throwing out some of it because the ones that were left were, you'll probably cringe at this, but they were the dark chocolate ones. And I'm just not, I like dark chocolate. Okay. But it was kind of like, I don't like it enough to where I wanted to eat it. So I just threw them out. And, but again, it's even nutritionists, even people who advise people on these things, we have these issues that we often are dealing with too. And and we have to unpack these things that we're in our own life where we have labeled ourselves as a overeater, someone who can't control themselves around food. And you know what's interesting is I've used that myself. I've used that fact to advise people, and I think probably inappropriately, that, hey, if you struggle with eating a whole bag of crisps or chocolate or cookies or whatever in one sitting, just don't get them in the house. Just when you need them, go to the gas station and buy a small six pack of it and just eat those. Well, yeah, I mean, that's not horrible advice, but at the same time, why not deal with the root issue, which I never was dealing with myself. So I was then not helping other people deal with it either. And so I found that I'm giving much better advice now that I'm doing this in my own life too.
I'll be honest. Yeah. And I've been there. And I think this is the thing where, you know, I get where my clients are coming from. And, you know, so many clients that I've taken through that journey, Tanya, you know, when she first came to me, she was like, I can't have a big bar of chocolate in my fridge because I'll eat it all. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I remember one of her first sessions, how would it feel to be able to have that in your fridge and not eat it all and just have a bit when you want? She goes, oh, it would be amazing. And she said to me afterwards, towards the end, she was like, I can do it. She goes, I can have chocolate in the fridge for ages. And she goes, when you first asked me how that would feel, Rebecca, I thought you were mad, because I thought, mm-hmm. I'm never going to be able to do that. She goes, and you've given me, she says, you've given me my freedom back when it comes to food, because I, you know, I can do that now. And yeah, and this is the other thing is clients will, and I do roll with it, you know, because clients do say to me in the beginning, I can't have such and such around the house. I can't have it in the house because I'll overeat it. And I, the question I always ask them when they say this to me is, how would it feel to be able to have it in the house and not have that obsessive feeling about it? And they're like, it would feel amazing. I'm like, right, I'm going to show you exactly how you can do that. Now, it is a process.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that happens overnight. And even Tanya, she, you know, I spoke last time about how she did go through a 3-week period of probably overeating, to be honest. Mm-hmm. And I had to let her go through that for her to come out the other side. Everybody is different. Not everybody goes through that. Everybody is different. But yeah, I mean, I think that's exactly it. And that's I think that's the difference between you and I and, you know, someone like Slimming World or Weight Watchers that would just be like, yeah, restrict it. Don't have it in the house. Get some quick wins that aren't going to last because they're not changing anything in here.
Right. Yeah, it is. It's much better now. I feel a lot better with that. And it's actually, you know how whenever you do something in life where you accomplish something and you feel somewhat a sense of pride that you've made, that you've accomplished this, that you've done a good job at work, that you've done these things, you feel successful, and it empowers you then to make other changes and to move forward in other areas, whether it's in the same area like nutrition or whether it's in another area of your life. And it just, all of these little wins, they kind of snowball and build on each other. And that's how we see people making changes in certain areas of their nutrition and it carrying over into their business and into other areas of their life and relationships and all kinds of things like that. So that's probably a good place to wrap up our conversation today.
Definitely. There were a few other things I wanted to touch on actually, but we will be doing a live, won't we? We'll be going live on LinkedIn. So if anybody is listening, isn't on LinkedIn, we will be doing a live on LinkedIn on Monday. So we can pick up on a few things again on there, but again, you know, we'll be talking again next week. We'll have another podcast so we can expand on more of it if we need to.
Well, this was another great discussion, and so look forward to talking to you on Monday. And so make sure people, anybody who's listening, tune in on that on LinkedIn. It's at 4 p.m UK time, and that's 10 a.m Central time in the US. So
cool, thanks so much. Hope to see you all there.
Yeah.
Enjoy your weekend.
You too.
Bye.